Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. And, you know, today we've got to go over something a little bit more specific, and that's going to be the death of Charlie Kirk. I couldn't help but notice that there is about a million different rumors flying around out there with pretty much no facts or information that goes into it. I don't even think anybody knows what the official statement of law enforcement is and how any of this went about. So we're going to look at all of that today. We're going to also look at some of these rumors and just get rid of about 99.9% of them, because a lot of the stuff that has to do with Charlie Kirk's death, quite frankly, is, I don't want to say like ill-informed, right? And for a lot of the things that people are out there alleging, I think there is way more rational explanations than people want it to believe. But the problem is that doesn't get them clicks. It doesn't get them likes. It doesn't get more content being pulled in. Instead, what it does is it generates conspiracies and it has people digging in and asking questions. And for the love of God, isn't it time that we just let his family rest? Like, is that too much to ask for at this point and let law enforcement do their job, as if somebody over on Twitter is going to end up figuring out this big mass conspiracy theory and being able to pin this to some other nation or somebody else? I mean, for the love of God, you know, all you got to do is go over and take a look at X and you can see the amount of crap that's actually out there. So today, in order to get rid of all of this stuff, we're going to end up going over the actual facts. Now, who am I to be able to judge what's actually reasonable and what's not? Well, for those of you that regularly follow the channel, I am retired from the military, had a career in the infantry and also in the special forces. I was sniper qualified, and I was also a law enforcement officer after my retirement from the military. So yeah, I think I can reasonably look at this and assess some of the facts, particularly when it comes down to ballistics, investigatory skills, and everything else that was used in order to make this freaking thing happen. So that's what we're going to do. And, you know, I did my absolute best to try to stay out of this madness for a while, but I had to jump in here. Why? Because I'm tired of seeing all of the garbage that's floating around on the internet. It's just way too much. So today we're going to look at the facts and we're going to go over exactly what those facts are. If you guys like this content, make sure you subscribe to the channel. Everybody else is jumping in here. It's good morning. It's good to have you guys, my friends. First, we're going to go over and we're going to listen to a medical examiner explain what exactly happened to Charlie Kirk when he got shot. This is a clip from Nancy Grace.
So in the very graphic video of him being shot, you can see the wound coming into his neck right around where I'm indicating. And he tips backwards right after he's shot. And he brings his arms up. But actually, when he's bringing his arms up, he is exhibiting what we call decorticate posturing, which means his spinal cord has been severed from his brain and it's no longer communicating with the rest of his body. So he was instantly rendered a quadriplegic. So that movement you see is actually just a reflexive movement by his nervous system trying to figure out what's going on. Then you see him tipping to the side and blood start gushing out of his wound on his neck, which to me means it's an artery that's hit, more likely than not the carotid artery and the jugular vein. So he's hemorrhaging heavily out the side of his neck as he's falling to the ground. Now, this spinal cord being severed at this level could be below C5, C6, so he could still be breathing and still be alive for a period of time, which he was when he was rushed to the hospital and died. But the damage that was done was so severe, even if he had survived, he probably would have had a stroke and he would have been a quadriplegic.
I was terrified. So there's that. We're going to start there. Number one, when the guy ended up actually getting shot and the bullet ends up entering into his body, ends up severing his spinal cord, which causes his body to seize up like that, which is exactly what we've been talking about. When you end up severing it, your body has this weird clenching moment. A lot of people end up seeing that. I'm seeing the comment down in there from Tanner saying, Matt asking for a prayer. Little boy in my town got ran over and killed 2 days ago by the high school riding his bike on a crosswalk. That is very sad. Lord, please look over his family. Please look over that this individual that actually potentially made the mistake in running over that child, and may both of them be able to heal. Amen. Guys, this is something that we need to talk about, because a lot of people are going, well, if he was shot like that, then, you know, he was reaching up and he was grabbing and stuff. No, that's literally his body tensing up. Now, that is a medical expert. I'm sorry if that doesn't fit the agenda of a lot of the experts over on Twitter who quite literally have no expertise in that field, but that's exactly what happened. A lot of people that have gone hunting have seen similar things when they end up shooting an animal and you end up getting a spinal cord injury. It's just the way it works. Same thing ends up happening on human beings. There's something else that ends up happening, which you guys are more than welcome to go look this up. It's called priapism. If you don't know what priapism is, particularly in males, when they end up having spinal cord injuries, they actually end up getting, for lack of better terms, a hard-on. Tristan Allen says, hey, Matt, did you hear about the baseball coach killed by Muslims for praying with the team? No, I did not hear about that, but it wouldn't surprise me. And I'm going to go ahead and keep this one on topic with Charlie Kirk and everything that's going on with him. I saw somebody else mention that Nate from Valhalla VFT had actually came out with a video. Don't you worry. You know, Nate's given me enough crap over time and his friends. I feel like it's high time that I flick Nate some crap back because, yeah, Nate, I'm just going to go ahead and do that. So, yeah, we're going to make that happen. This is one of the other conspiracies that ended up coming out lately, and I think this one started to hit yesterday. The, oh my God, what is everybody hiding? And I guess this came from Destiny. Yeah, we're just going to go ahead and talk about the common sense thing that likely ended up happening with this after we play the video. Remote detonator, huh? There you go. Now all of a sudden we've got a remote detonator being handed off. This is now being used as evidence that his microphone exploded. His microphone was carrying a bullet inside of it, and the microphone going off is what ended up hitting him in the neck. That's the new theory thanks to this garbage. Well, we're going to talk about it. Let's finish it out. Yeah, well, let's watch it one more time. He definitely didn't grab anything and put anything in a pocket. The guy could have simply been diving for cover once he realized what the heck happened and that maybe possibly he was in like the line of sight. There's a million reasons for that guy to have done what he was doing. And as for the other guy that jumped over the table and he possibly handed something off, first, let's take a look at where these men were positioned. It's pretty clear that prior to this event, both these men are well within Charlie Kirk's security detail. Now, you can call it a cell phone. I can call it car keys. At the end of the day, what ends up happening when instances like this occur is they actually have different drills that they end up running in order to get it out of there. These guys know that it's going to be quicker for them to bandage Charlie, throw him in the back of a car, and haul balls to a medical facility because seconds count in saving his life. And so they're going to get that a heck of a lot quicker. They're going to get that done a heck of a lot quicker. That's why you pay money to have guys like these there that are guarding and watching you. Calling 911 phone back pocket very well could have been. But again, many other things versus hiding a remote detonator. Because if you were going to do something like this, you definitely would not hand it off in front of a camera. That just is stupid. Not to mention there's no burn marks or anything like that that ended up getting noted on Charlie's shirt from a bullet potentially going off or an explosive. What you actually see when like the shirt lifts up, that all has to do with the shockwave of that projectile that's flying at supersonic speeds. It's displacing air and pushing air out from the side. So as it comes in, that air actually hits. If you guys have ever watched videos of spotting trace and things like that, or if you guys are long range shooters, you can go look this up. What you'll end up seeing is you're following trace, you're following the displacement of air. And as it flies into the target, as long as your parallax is set right, what you'll actually see is that air displacement popping and pushing away from the target as that round ends up impacting it. And that is exactly what happened with Charlie's shirt in that incident. So his shirt jumping off of his chest or moving away from his chest is not an indication that he was actually shot in the chest. That has to do with the supersonic flight of the round, the air displacement, and how that air was displaced once it ended up reaching the projectile, ended up reaching his body. So two entirely different things. Another big thing that we're going to talk about that I think a lot of people have lost their minds about in the past has to do with like the backpack that this guy was wearing, right? Saying that he was wearing his backpack and that backpack ended up, because of, you know, the video that the police put out, they're saying that The image of the suspect with the backpack, that he had the rifle broken down inside of the backpack. And there's no way that this rifle could have been broken down inside of his bag. And then he put it together when he got on the roof, and then he took it apart and he jumped off. And that's what everybody wants us to believe, because there was a screwdriver or something like that affiliated. Well, that's not the official narrative, and that's not what happened, believe it or not. As a matter of fact, all you got to do is go over and read the charging paperwork of the suspect, and you're able to actually get all of this information pretty freaking clear and depicted from it, which is what we're going to do. So now let's go over and let's take a look at what this actually says. And we're going to briefly, we're going to fly over some of this stuff. It's a 10-page PDF, all right? This is his probable cause affidavit of everything that he did and why they believe that he was responsible for it. And yes, it is confirmed that his roommate was his lover and that he did, in fact, confess this not only to his roommate, but it looks like to his parents as well. And the explanation about the backpack and why that rifle doesn't fit inside of his bag, guess what? That's actually explained inside of the probable cause affidavit, which is used to throw his butt in jail. And Cog Faraday come out, gives out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. Thank you, sir. MT says, finally, someone with sense talking about this. It's been nothing but artard and grifter noise, which is now putting Erica and his team at risk. I thoroughly agree with that statement, and that's part of the reason I actually wanted to come out and do this, because I'm tired of seeing so much stuff that's out there that doesn't go into it. People are saying this is fishy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, let's actually read what it is. Now, these are all the different charges that they ended up hitting him with, like up in the beginning of the document of the probable cause affidavit: aggravated murder, victim targeting enhancement, violent offense committed in the presence of a child, aggravating factor, count 2, felony discharge of a firearm causing serious bodily injury, victim targeting enhancement, violent offense committed in the presence of a child. So all of those things that you see, violent offense committed in the presence of a child, aggravating factor, these are what we call enhancement charges. All right. So the initial count, felony discharge of a firearm, but the victim targeting enhancement, because he is a political figure or political expression, that ends up putting, you know, it basically bumps it up a level in what they're allowed to hit him with in level of felony. And the same thing when you end up putting it in the presence of a child, it's like destruction of property, like it, for domestic violence cases, right? Domestic violence can mean anything from physical abuse to verbal abuse to intimidation to pushing to harassment to a phone call. All of that can be considered domestic violence. But what the real problem is, or what the actual charge is, let's say assault, and then domestic violence is the enhancement charge that goes underneath it. That's much like what you're seeing up here on the screen. Fox McCloud says, yes, but has anybody interrogated the space laser? No, nobody has interrogated the space laser yet. Don't worry about it. Space laser, we're getting there. Count 3, obstruction of justice. Count 4, obstruction of justice. Count 5, tampering with a witness. Count 6, tampering with a witness. Count 7, violent offense committed in the presence of a child, and victim targeting enhancement. Now, here's the probable cause statement. This is quite literally the narrative. This is what landed this person in jail. So these are the things that the law enforcement officers are saying. These are all facts. Now, this probable cause statement is not beyond a reasonable doubt. This is simply saying that we have probable cause to believe that this offense was committed and this individual committed said offense, right? And that is more, how do I want to say this? More than likely that the individual or suspect named in this document did those things. So here we have the probable cause statement. Brian Davis of the Utah State Bureau of Investigations have probable cause, all right, to believe that the defendant committed the above listed offenses. All right. On September 10th, 2025, at approximately 12:23, Charlie Kirk was shot and killed while speaking to a large crowd over in Utah Valley. Police found the suspected murder weapon, a bolt-action 30-06 rifle, nearby. Over the next 33 hours, police conducted a manhunt for the shooter until on the evening of September 11th, when Tyler James Robinson surrendered to the police at the Washington County Sheriff's Office. DNA consistent with Robinson was found on the rifle's trigger. After shooting Mr. Kirk, Robinson hid the gun, discharged the clothing he wore when firing the rifle, and told his lover/roommate to delete incriminating text messages and not to talk to the police. Children were present at the time of the shooting. So this opening statement lays all of the groundwork for you, that this individual went up and admitted to doing it, walked in, that his DNA, which is taken for felonies, all right? So he goes and he grabs, they grab the DNA off of him, and it ends up matching the rifle. Now, later in this document, you're going to see it actually ends up matching like the towel or the rag, whatever the heck it was. It's like wrapped around the rifle. It also matches on the trigger. And for some of you guys that don't understand, you can actually get what's called touch DNA, all right? Like little skin cells and stuff end up falling off as you're touching things. It's very hard to get. It doesn't happen all of the time, but they're saying that they ended up finding it on the trigger. That's believable, just likely because of the amount that the guy was like sweating and everything going into it. So there's a good probability that stuff would have been on there and it would have dried in place. The shooting. Turning Point USA, a nonprofit organization founded in 2012 by Charlie Kirk, organized a public outdoor event to be held at noon on September 10th. The event was first in a series of similar events to be held at college campuses. Mr. Kirk was a well-known conservative activist, famous for these types of events where he discussed various political debates with audience members. His events and commitments have garnered significant numbers of supporters, blah, 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 disagreeing with his political views. What that lays the groundwork is for, if anybody you were wondering why, remember that they threw those enhancement charges on there for the motivation of it being political. The event at UVU was announced far in advance and garnered significant public interest. Consequently, several hundred people attended. Mr. Kirk was interacting with the crowd before the event officially got underway. Then at approximately noon, he seated himself under a portable canopy behind a table and a microphone, began speaking to the crowd, fielding questions. All right, all they're doing is laying the groundwork. Mr. Kirk's team members were very close to him on his right and left, as well as some behind his canopy and others very close locations near him. This, again, laying the groundwork for endangering other people, okay? So all they're doing is validating the charges that are in the document so far. Large crowds surrounded Mr. Kirk on three sides. Temporary metal fencing separated attendees from Mr. Kirk by only a matter of feet. Directly above and behind Mr. Kirk was the UVU Hall of Flags, an indoor walkway spanning several hundred feet with floor-to-ceiling glass windows that overlooked the plaza where he was seated. People were in the walkway at the time of the shooting. All they are doing, again, is painting the fact that this shot put tons of people at risk, not just Charlie Kirk. Approximately 15 minutes into the event, Mr. Kirk was answering a question about mass shootings by transgender individuals when a gunshot rang out. They put that in there for a reason, because it also goes to validate motives behind the shooter. I'll say that again. This information that they put in here goes to motives behind the shooter. The fact that he was actually talking about trans violent at the shot, the time the shot rang out, is significant, believe it or not. Whether or not you want to believe that, it is when you take into what is known as the totality of the circumstances, is why is that individual out there? It's also why they ended up labeling his roommate his lover, all right, at the beginning of this document, because that also goes into providing motive. Motive is one of the hardest freaking things to prove. However, they do believe that they have probable cause. So again, they're not saying this is 100% the reason behind it, but they're laying the groundwork for it. Approximately 15 minutes, so the shot rings out. The bullet's trajectory passed closely to several other individuals besides Mr. Kirk, including the questioner who was standing directly in front of him. Children were visible near Mr. Kirk on stage when he was shot. Mr. Kirk was rushed to a nearby hospital where he was declared deceased. The medical examiner report is pending. Matt, why do you think there is no exit wound? Oh, don't worry. I'm going to get to that here in just a minute. And yes, I'm bringing up Nate from Valhalla VFT because he always gives me crap. So today it's my turn to turn the turntables on him and flick him crap. The UVU surveillance investigation. At the moment of the shot, the police officer was watching the crowd from an elevated point. As soon as he heard the shot, he began to scan the area for threats, believing the shot came from a rifle because of its sound. He looked for potential sniper positions. He noted a rooftop area approximately 160 yards away from Mr. Kirk as a potential shooting position and rushed there to look for evidence. So you had a law enforcement officer that was pulling security on top of a building. The shot rings out. He identifies a location after hearing it where he believes it could have came from. Now, this is significant because he's elevated above everybody that's down at ground level. When you're down at ground level, all right, inside that little area, things are going to reverberate and bounce off. This guy that's up elevated is going to have a better idea of where the shot came from. Alleyway June says, but can this punk hit his target on his first shot with an old gun? Yes. And as a matter of fact, Alleyway June, just to address that question really quick, it could be a million different things. The fact that the shot hit him in the neck doesn't tell us where he was actually aiming at. He could have been aiming at Charlie's chest. He could have been aiming at Charlie's head. He could have pulled the round. You could also have a weapon system that's unzeroed. Maybe he fired a perfect shot but it wasn't correctly zeroed. Maybe he was like aiming at his head, and then you had a squib load, all right, one that's coming out just a little bit quieter, i.e. not all the powder's burning. There's complete and total squibs where the freaking projectile basically gets lodged in the barrel. Then you have ones that have like basically like partial deflagration of all the powder that's inside to where it all doesn't burn and it gives a lower muzzle velocity. And then it's going to then have a shorter trajectory, if you will. So it's going to go slower. So the arc, and it's going to go down. So he could have been aiming at his head, and because of that, could have struck him in the neck. There's a lot of different things that we're about to talk about. A lot of people don't understand when it comes to ballistics that could actually make this whole thing completely and totally believable. So we're going to keep going on, and then I'm going to get to the ballistics aspect here in just a second. Now, when we go and we look a little bit deeper, all right, the shooting position, suspected shooting position, is adjacent to an open, publicly accessible walkway to access the suspect's location. Person must climb over a railing and then drop to the roof only slightly below. The officer climbed over the railing and down to the roof. He walked to the suspected shooting position and confirmed a clear shooting corridor between the position and where Mr. Kirk was seated. He also noticed markings on the gravel rooftop consistent with a sniper having lain on the roof, impressions in the gravel potentially left by elbows, knees, and feet of a person in a prone shooting position. So they're saying that this gravel rooftop, there is evidence that shows that somebody was laying from that particular position in the prone, leaving marks from their elbows, knees, and feet. So that is allegedly documented up on the rooftop. All of that information, that officer hopefully had a body-worn cam, and you're going to be able to see from the evidence when it goes to trial, this body-worn cam of that guy going up and jumping onto the rooftop and seeing all of this stuff. But there's more to that ammo, and we're going to talk about that in a sec. Police reviewed surveillance from the camera covering the roof and discovered that it recorded an individual dressed in dark clothing crossing the railing from the public walkway and dropped onto the roof at approximately 12:15 p.m. Although the individual moved out of the camera's view for a short time, the camera again captured the individual running across the roof and then low crawling to the area the UVU officer recognized as where the suspected sniper had dropped into the prone shooting position. After a short time, which matches the known time of the shot, the individual rose and ran across the rooftop to the northeast. So now they're telling you they have camera footage of this individual entering the shooting position and exiting the shooting position on time with when the shot was fired. In addition, there's also ground sign, all right, to where the shooter was actually from. This discovery led to an intensive review of their surveillance recordings in an attempt to track and identify him. Surveillance revealed the following. At approximately 11:51 a.m., the suspect entered the campus from the north. He's seen wearing a black shirt with an American flag in its center and a dark baseball cap, large sunglasses. Throughout the surveillance, the suspect keeps his head down and rarely raises his head enough to get a clear image of his face. As he proceeds across the campus, he is seen walking with an unusual gait. The suspect walks with a very little bending and being in his pants. So everybody that's out there talking about how there's no possible way this guy hid that rifle in his backpack, even if they broke it down, it would be extending out of his bag. All of that is totally pointless. It doesn't matter, because what's being laid out here is on the surveillance footage, you have a suspect that is walking into the scene, barely moving his leg, indicating to law enforcement that he has an elongated object that's rigid, that's not allowing him to move his leg. So what does that mean? They're saying that the rifle was in his pants, or they believe the rifle was in his pants, for the love of God. And it makes perfect sense why he would have a backpack as well, because afterwards, here in just a minute, they're going to explain that to you. The unusual gait continues until the suspect is seen crossing the railing off open the walkway and onto the roof where he leaves the camera's views. So he keeps his weird walk until he is out of the camera's view. A camera later captures a suspect as he runs across the roof to the suspected shooting position. Immediately after the shot fired, a camera captures a suspect running across the roof carrying an item whose shape is consistent with a rifle. So they're now clearly stating that he was leaving the area carrying what appears to be a rifle. Expanded crime scene investigation. This is where it starts to get extremely interesting and absolutely points that the suspect is arrested for a reason. Law enforcement officers followed the suspect's escape path to the northeast of the campus, where they believe the suspect left campus and entered a wooded area. In that wooded area, investigators found a bolt-action rifle wrapped in a towel. The rifle contained one spent round and three unspent rounds. So, inside of the rifle was the chambered shell casing from which he fired. I see a lot of you guys are telling me that I'm skipping, and let me turn on my volume.
Area. And that wooded area, investigators found a bolt action.
I am not skipping on this side. You guys, go ahead and try to refresh your audio to make sure that works. There's one other thing I can do to try to make that go away. And that's actually turned off, so you shouldn't be getting that whatsoever. That would have been my noise gate, but the noise gate's off for you guys. Loud and clear on my end. If your guys' audio is skipping, refresh the stream. This is inconsistent with the facts that the officers observed at the time of immediately after the shooting. No shell casings were found on the roof, suggesting a bolt-action rifle rather than an auto-loading weapon. Only a single round was fired. Each round in the rifle contained an etched inscription as follows. Fired cartridge. This is what was written on the cartridge that was in his weapon. No Tice's bulge. OWO. What's this? Second cartridge. Hey fascist. Catch. Arrow symbols. Third cartridge. Oh Bella Chow. Bella Chow. Bella Chow. Chow Chow. Fourth cartridge. If you read this, you're gay. LMAO. All right. So we continue on and we go a little bit deeper. The rifle, ammunition, rounds, and towel were sent for forensic processing. DNA consistent with Robinson was found on the trigger, other parts of the rifle, the fired cartridge casing, two of the three unfired cartridges, and the towel. Now, if this was simply them trying to pin this to him, right, they're doing a very good job by painting out and saying that the DNA was found not just on the rifle, but also two or three of the four rifle cartridges that were actually pulled out, one being spent. Law enforcement was unable to immediately locate the shooter, so they published photos of him. Obvious. Washington County investigation. On the evening of the 11th, law enforcement continued their investigation. Tyler James Robinson went to the sheriff's office with his parents and a family friend to turn himself in. His mother stated the following to police that the day after the shooting, his mother saw a photo of the shooter in the news and thought it looked like her son. She then called her son to ask him where he was. He said the other was he said that he was home and sick. They had also been homesick on September 10th. His mom expressed concern to her husband that the suspected shooter looked like Robinson, and the father agreed. The mother explained that over the last year or so, Robinson had become more political and started to lean more to the left, becoming more pro-gay and trans-oriented. So this is no longer a conspiracy. Now we have numerous things that are adding up. Not only is law enforcement stating that he was romantically involved with his roommate, but they're also stating that the mother says that over the last year, he has become more politically motivated and started leaning to the left, becoming more pro-gay and trans rights oriented. She stated that Robinson began to date his roommate, a biological male who is transitioning genders. So again, now it's not the law enforcement, it's the mother that's stating this. This resulted in several discussions with family members, but especially between Robinson and his father, who have very different political views. And here you go. Anybody that's saying he was raised by the radical right to cause this and make this happen is not true. Him and his parents have different views. Doesn't say that they're radical, doesn't say anything of that nature, but he's arguing about trans rights and everything, and if his family is on the right, yes, that makes sense. In one conversation before the shooting, Robinson mentioned that Charlie Kirk would be holding an event at UVU, which Robinson said was a stupid venue for the event, and he accused Charlie Kirk of spreading hate. There is another key piece of evidence which goes towards motivation. So now we have witnesses who happen to be his parents, who it's really hard to get parents to go against their kids, are sitting there stating that not only was he pissed off at Charlie Kirk for spreading hate, or he was upset and he believed Charlie Kirk was spreading hate, that he was romantically involved with his roommate, who was a male transitioning to a female, and in the year prior, he had become more pro-trans rights, more pro-gay rights, more all of those things. And so for his own personal beliefs, he's got a man that he doesn't like. That definitely falls in line with motive and trying to prove motive. Robinson's father reported that when his wife showed him the surveillance images of the suspected shooter on the news, he agreed it also looked like their son. He also believed that the rifle that the police suspected the shooter using matched the rifle that was given to his son as a gift. I want you guys to remember that. This rifle was given to him as a gift. This is going to go into some of those ballistics that we're talking about here in just a second, because we get some more clues as to why we got the external ballistics that we did. As a result, Robinson's father contacted his son and asked him to send a photo of the rifle. He did not respond. However, Robinson's father spoke on the phone with him, and Robinson implied that he planned to take his own life. Robinson's parents were able to convince him to meet at their home. As they discussed the situation, Robinson implied that he was the shooter and said that he couldn't go to jail and just wanted to end it. When asked why he did it, Robinson explained there wasn't much to the evil in this. Robinson explained there is too much evil in the guy and he spreads too much hate. They talked to Robinson for turning himself in and convinced him to speak with a family friend who is a retired deputy sheriff. At Robinson's father's request, the family friend met with Robinson and his parents and convinced him to turn himself in. The family friend spoke to police and reported telling Robinson that it would be best if he brought all the evidence with him to the sheriff's office to avoid police having to search his parents' home. Family friend also asked Robinson if he had any clothes that were related to what he did. Robinson replied that he disposed of the clothes in different areas. There makes sense for why he had a backpack. He was carrying a change of clothes. It wasn't for the rifle. It was for a change of clothes. Sean Hughes. His own text to his roommate. He was talking about how he left his grandpa's gun in the woods and tried to go back and get it, but the cops had found it. Thank you, Sean, for foreshadowing what we actually have coming up. It was his grandfather's gun. The roommate. Police interviewed the roommate, a biological male who was involved with a romantic relationship with Robinson. Police are flat out saying it. They interviewed his roommate. They were in a romantic relationship together. On September 10th, 2025, the roommate received a text from Robinson which said, "Drop what you're doing and look under my keyboard." Roommate looked under the keyboard and found a note that stated, "I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Cook. I'm going to take it." Police found a photograph of this note. The roommate likely took a photograph of that note. This is getting more and more beyond something that is staged to a very deliberate act by this individual. A note under the keyboard. The parents have spotted him. The guy has DNA on the rifle. They recovered the rifle. The parents recognize him. He's spotted walking through the area with the rifle in his freaking pants. He's spotted on the rooftop. They find the shooting position. All of those things are well detailed and laid out in this probable cause affidavit. The following text exchange then took place. After reading the note, the roommate responded, "What? You're joking, right?" Robinson said, "I am still okay, my love, but I'm stuck in Orem for a little while longer. Shouldn't be long until I can come home, but I gotta grab my rifle still. To be honest, I had hoped to keep this secret till I died of old age. I am sorry to involve you." Roommate, "You weren't the one who did it, right?" Robinson, "I am. Sorry." Roommate, "I thought they caught the person." Robinson, "No, they grabbed some crazy old dude, then interrogated someone in similar clothing. I had planned to grab my rifle from my drop point shortly after, but most of that side of town got locked down. It's quiet, almost enough to get out, but there's one vehicle lingering." Roommate, "Why?" Robinson, "Why did I do it?" Roommate, "Yeah." Robinson, "I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated. If I'm able to grab my rifle unseen, I will have left no evidence. Going to attempt to retrieve it again. Hopefully they have moved on. I haven't seen anything about them finding it." Now this goes a little bit deeper because we have his lover slash roommate who likely was uninvolved with the parents. If the parents didn't agree with this crap, I highly doubt the parents sat there and talked to his lover slash roommate, and they were able to have these discussions. The thought that Robinson's parents and his lover roommate coordinated and said that Charlie Kirk was spreading hate is pretty unlikely in this scenario. Pretty dang unlikely. So they're both talking about hatred and how Robinson felt that there was hatred. In order to make those two things like match, I don't think it's possible. I mean, I don't think it's probable. Is it possible that the two had done this in order to set up the kid? Sure. But is it probable? And the answer is no. Roommate, how long have you been planning this? Robinson, a bit over a week, I believe. I can get close to it, but there's a squad car parked right by it. I think they already swept that spot, but I don't want to chance it. Robinson, I'm wishing I had circled back and grabbed it as soon as I got to my vehicle. I'm worried what I told my old man would do if I didn't bring it back to Grandpa's rifle. I don't know if it had a serial number, but it wouldn't trace to me. I worry about prints I had taken to leave it in the bush where I changed outfits, didn't have the ability or time to bring it with me. I might have to abandon it, and I hope they don't find prints. How the F will I explain losing this rifle to my old man? This goes, again, a little bit deeper. Now we know it's his grandfather's rifle. His father had gifted it to him, and he ended up losing it out there. So this is the shooter's boyfriend that he's talking to, and he says that he left his grandfather's rifle out there. Now, most of the time when these things are handed down, guess what else is handed down with it? Ammunition. I don't know how old this ammunition is, but as an avid shooter, I can tell you that the older the ammo gets, the less reliable it becomes. It depends on how it's stored. Most people that have a freaking bolt action 30-06 don't store their ammo in like the best of environments. Sometimes it's wet. Sometimes it's taken hunting. Sometimes it's out, jammed into a rifle, put back in a box over and over. And these things can be handed down over time. We're not even there yet. Don't worry about it. Only thing I left was the rifle wrapped in a towel. So now we have the suspect admitting on text, probably before the law enforcement officers found the rifle, as to how it was actually found. This proves that Matt works for Mossad. Yeah, I know, right? Remember how his engraving bullets, the effing messages, are mostly a big meme. If I see notices bulge UWU on Fox News, I might have a stroke. All right, I'm going to have to leave now. That really effing sucks. This guy's head is clearly not in the game. He acknowledges that he killed somebody, and now he's acknowledging very specific things that are on those rifle cartridges. And again, all of these text messages are going to be timestamped as to when they're sent from one person's phone to another. All of this stuff is going to be evidence that's going to have to come out in court. Matt, the prosecutor releasing these texts surely isn't allowed under the law, as it nullifies evidence for a fair trial. Is that right? No. Paul, this is the probable cause affidavit. This is what actually threw him in jail, and these are the things that they put in order to validate the charges. So this isn't even all of the evidence. This is simply them stating this is what we have. All right. And it's not necessarily going to throw it out of the trial, because it's crystal clear that he is the one now that sent these text messages. They're going to be able to prove it. Judging from today, I'd say Grandpa's gun does just fine. I don't know. I think that was a $2,000 scope. Robinson, delete this exchange. My dad wants photos of the rifle. He says Grandpa wants to know who has what. The Fed's releasing a photo of the rifle, and it's very unique. He's calling me right now. I'm not answering. Again, all of these things are going to be tied together in his cell phone plan. These are things that you can't make up. The messages his dad was sending, the conversation between him and his boyfriend / lover / roommate, what his father's saying, what his grandfather's saying, all of those things you can't just pull out of thin air. Robinson, since Trump got into office, my dad has been pretty diehard MAGA. I'm going to turn myself in willingly. One of my neighbors here is a deputy for the sheriff. You are all I worry about, love. I am much too worried about you. Don't talk to the media, please. Don't take any interviews or make any comments. If any, please ask questions, ask for a lawyer, and stay silent. This is where the witness tampering comes into place. Again, this is substantiating more and more of the charges that they ended up throwing against him. I hope you guys can see how clear of a picture this is now painting. Search for Robinson's residence. Police executed a warrant. During the search, officers discovered a shell casing with etchings like the etchings found on the shells and the rifle near UVU. Police also found several targets with bullet holes in Robinson's home. So now we have evidence that he, one, did that crap while inside of his house, and two, that he took the rifle target shooting and actually practiced. Then it goes over the different counts: aggravated murder, felony discharge of the rifle, obstructing justice, witness tampering, violent offense committed in the presence of a child. Signed by Utah County Attorney Jeffrey Gray from the Utah County Attorney's Office. So, what all of that does, that probable cause affidavit, is it lays out specifically how Robinson went about doing this and why they arrested him. They laid out corroborating witness statements that are going to be corroborated with written facts via text messages that Robinson sent, that his parents sent, phone calls backed up by everything, rifle given by the grandfather, and they're going to end up having his DNA on the rifle itself, DNA in the towel, remembering that the towel actually has his DNA on it that was found in the woods, and all of that came out likely before the actual weapon system itself was found. Then Robinson turns himself in after they find the weapon system, and they're going to pull Robinson's DNA. So I want you to think about this. The weapon system itself, all right, the rifle and the towel that they found his DNA on, they would have taken and they would have swabbed for DNA and they would turn that in, all right? They would turn that in to get DNA off of it before Robinson turned himself in. So that DNA is already in the system. When Robinson comes in and he says, I did this, they swab Robinson for DNA. And then they send that off and the DNA profile comes back. Those two different pieces of evidence and when they were submitted are all things that are going to be there at trial. You're going to find out when they actually took the rifle and when they pulled the DNA off of it and when they submitted it. It's all logged in the computer system. Then you're going to discover when Robinson walked in, they swabbed his DNA and they submitted that and they compared the two samples to say, yes, this was him. I.e., there's no way for law enforcement to actually stage that. That all of that would have been documented. If this was back in like the 40s or 50s or 60s, whatever, you can sit there and you can say that they fudged with paperwork. But all this stuff, the evidence room, like where they take the evidence, they bag it up, where they take it and they ship it off, all of that stuff is documented. It's all shown on camera. So you're going to have timestamps on the camera. You're going to have like the timestamps of when the evidence ends up getting submitted. You're going to have all of those things that are documented and that you just can't get away from. You're going to have the text messages all documented that you can't get away from. Here we go again. All right, Nate, now it's my time.
It was an absolute miracle that someone else didn't get killed. His bone was so healthy and the density was so, so impressive that he's like the Man of Steel. It should have just gone through and through. It's likely would have killed those standing behind him too. In the end, the coroner did find the bullet just beneath the skin.
Nate, I love you to death, brother, but you're quoting a doctor that knows quite literally jack and crap about ballistics. You and me, on the other hand, we do know about ballistics, and we should do a much better job about explaining these things to people. Just because the doctor said he had bones of steel doesn't mean he had bones of steel, nor does that mean how any of that happened. There's several different contributing factors that can lead into the ballistics behaving the way in which it did once it ended up entering his body. You have three different phases of ballistics. You have internal ballistics, external ballistics, and terminal ballistics. The type of projectile that was actually used also plays a huge part into how this could have came to be. Man, this old Nate busting butt on this came on, and it's true. Where is the autopsy yet? Autopsies can take anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks for them to actually generate the entire report. And if you've never looked into how autopsies are actually conducted, I highly suggest you do that. But the autopsy takes time. The results take time for all of that information to actually come out, get generated in a report, and pushed out. So external ballistics are weird, right? Well, external ballistics are likely the easier ones. Internal ballistics are a little bit harder, okay? So if you guys are asking about how all of this could have happened, there's several different ways. We can talk about barrel harmonics. We can talk about how resting your barrel on a certain object or it touching something could cause the round to fly off trajectory, depending on where he's laying on the roof and how close that bullet actually came to coming across the roof. Remember how I talked about the shockwave that comes off that bullet, and that's what you end up seeing that shirt jump for, is the shockwave of the air displacement of the bullet. Guess what happens when a bullet goes over that? That shockwave also affects that projectile as it's flying over that as well. Lots of different factors to actually take into account here. And the bottom line is you could have had what I described earlier as a squib load, i.e. you have a low order ignition of all of the powder inside of that cartridge because it could be wet, it could be bad powder, it could be old powder. We don't know. That's going to overall affect the trajectory. If this guy was in fact aiming at Charlie's head, okay, That also accounts for why it slapped into his neck. What we're seeing is a significant drop in velocity in that case, causing that round to deviate and fly a little bit lower. That's not going to cause it to fly off to the right or to the left. You're still going to have spin stabilization of the round going along its actual trajectory, but a slower burning powder or powder that didn't burn all of the way and didn't go off is going to cause that round to actually have a lower point of impact than every other cartridge that he'd fired out of that rifle. So if we were to assume that he's aiming at the head and we know the bullet impacted in his neck, then we know that that projectile is actually flying slower than the one that the round was zeroed with. Now, you can also take into account the weight of the projectile as well. If it was a heavier projectile with a ballistic tip and it happened to have slower powder burn, the results that we ended up seeing absolutely could match up. The way these projectiles work, when it goes down to the ballistic tips, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't, will actually open up and spread open and cause it to bite onto more tissue and dissipate more of the energy. It's not necessarily, all right, it's not necessarily that he had bones of steel. That's just a doctor with his own religious beliefs or whatever it is that he wants to go out there and he wants to throw some magic statement against 15 minutes of fame. All right, there's several different like common sense things that could have caused this to occur. I can't right now with this crap. We're going to get back there in just a sec. I got to wait for this to run. Yeah, I know. I got to finish getting these freaking ads skipped on here.
Skin. And I'm going to show you some new ballistic tests with 30-06 against human bone here in a second. But let's look at the actual post. Guys, I'm going to be honest. Had some people send me this last night when it first dropped. I remember sitting on the couch next to my wife. She showed it to me. I read it and I said, oh, that's so dumb. That's obviously fake. There's no way that's real. And I just moved on with it because it was just, this was so outrageously stupid that there was no way. There was no way that this was a real post. And then I wake up this morning to hundreds of you guys emailing.
That's great. No exit wound. But again, lots of logical ways for this to have actually occurred, and crazier things have happened than this. This is why you end up getting people that survive miraculous instances. Like they go through, you know, these life or death scenarios. I have a buddy that ended up getting shot in the chest and he walks away just fine. I know somebody else that gets shot in the arm and almost freaking dies. Jacob Weiss coming in with 20 says, I still believe that this guy knew what he was doing. He had to be doing this for a long time. Correct. He had to have been going about this. He had to have been planning it. He says it was about a week, and that's that. The fact that the doctor called it, how do I want to say? The fact that the doctor says that this is somehow, his neck was made of steel or he's a man of steel bones, whatever. None of that freaking matters, all right? The doctor himself is not a ballistics expert. He doesn't sit there and he doesn't look at it. There's so many external factors that go into it. And so what I'm trying to tell you is you have a bunch of people right now trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, taking, you know, the old saying that we have, which is correlation doesn't equal causation, right? Now what we have is people saying correlation equals causation. We have people that are trying to find little things like the initial video that I showed of the guy jumping over and handing something off. And there's a perfectly reasonable explanation, which could be car keys. Yeah, I mentioned this before that there was a case back in the 90s where a scientist had found like a perfectly carved round stone. Like it was perfect. And everybody's like, there's no way in hell that this could have actually happened. And then some poor farmer down in Mexico says, you know what? I have a tool that does that exact same thing. And this is how it's done. There was no ballistic vest. There was nothing else that actually goes into this. What it looks like and what it is appearing to be is that some psychopath transgender individual decided to jump a wall after walking around the campus with a rifle tucked into his pant leg, crawl into position, shoot Charlie Kirk, bullet impacts his neck, and then he gets up, he runs, stashes the rifle, changes the clothes he had inside of his backpack, texts his transgender lover, his parents, then question when they end up putting out the image of the shooter. They say this 100% looks like him. All of that stuff is all substantiated and it goes in there. I'm going to open up the Discord because I want to hear your guys' questions and what you have to say about it. I know there's a lot of people that are very upset over the fact that this just certainly looks like it is what it is. All right. And people want to come out and have different conspiracy theories. Well, I have news for you. Not everything's a conspiracy theory. Sometimes it's just as plain and simple as it appears. And in this case with Charlie Kirk, you guys, we sat here live as it went down. I went live the moment Charlie was shot and we walked over everything. I told you it definitely looked like he had suffered from a fatal gunshot wound and he's dead. All right. Now what people are trying to do is they're trying to grab other things. They're trying to take this, result. They're demanding to see the autopsy. this does not work on your time frame. This is an actual murder investigation. They are going to cross their T's and dot their I's. They're going to make sure everything's there. Texas, what's up, man?
No audio, Matt.
You can't hear me? That. All right, I'm going to back out and come back in. Hate that. All right, how about now?
Oh, you're loud and clear.
That's so weird. How are you today? That every time. Okay, yeah. So this is what we've got. Like, after reading the probable cause affidavit, that tells me all of the evidence that they have to kind of like substantiate that. And while I look at some of the video evidence that I have, I've even gone back on my own statement when I originally said, looks like he actually got hit in the back of the head. That's not what that is anymore. Like, that part that I thought had actually hit him in the back of the head isn't actually him being shot in the back of the head. That's a portion of his ear mic that actually came flying off, and it just looked that way at the time.
I'm not convinced on a few things. The biggest issue is obviously the size of that round and what that round does to like normal scenarios. But again, there is. I've had before a bad AK round that fired at a target, at a wooden target, with a paper on it at the polygon here in Ukraine, and it impacted the wood, but it didn't even go through, and it just stayed there sideways, it like stuck, it pressed into the wood because.
Right? Yep.
Yeah. It happened before, and it's very rare. Obviously, you have to have the bad luck of having a bad round, or the powder is dried up or missing or not, like they're like wet. There's a lot of things that can go into it.
There's a million external factors that could cause a slower muzzle velocity and a tumbling round. A lot of different factors that can cause that.
Yeah, but so then I agree with that. Then I go into the thing, if it is a tumbling round, that wound wouldn't be that clean. Like that we see, like it doesn't look like a weird gash or like a laceration. It just looks like a point, like a hole. So if that's an impact round that was tumbling, it would have looked more, especially if it hit flesh, it would have looked a little bit more like a laceration. It would have like came in sideways and ripped stuff open versus just came in and made that impact. And then also if it was so slow that it could be stopped in his neck, then the round must have traveled so slow that it wouldn't have made such a big shockwave on the shirt and everything else. So, like, these are the few things that I'm, like, stuck on yet. And I keep saying, like, there's so many scenarios that could happen. That still doesn't explain what the reflection in the window of the muzzle flash is, because if you look at where the window is angled and what else reflects on it, then you can see that the reflection again, would have not been able to be a line of sight.
Again,
that,
it could be something. It could be something as simple as somebody's phone going back and forth at the time.
Yeah, it could.
There's a million possibilities for it, and that's why I look 100%, at it and say,
just like the guy comes with a video of somebody clicking his arm on his elbow, right. And it happens to be at the same exact time, and he's like, "Oh, look, he's detonating it, or he's triggering a finger pistol, or whatever they're called." I don't think that is the case, but like I still am so convinced that that was a suppressed round and the rifle that
I'll tell you why it's not. So this is a pen gun, right? I've shown it on this podcast a time or two. This is a pen gun, okay? And it shoots a 22 long rifle. When I shoot this from my hand, in my hand with it backed up, so literally taken and put into my hand, and it's a 22 long rifle, the barrel is literally this short. This is the entirety of the barrel. Of course, I've got stuff falling in the background now. This is the entirety of the barrel. It's nothing. And the projectile starts here. I mean, it literally goes here. So the actual barrel length on here is about yay much. And it's not very much time for pressure build or anything like that behind it. But that within itself, a 22LR this big, you can actually feel it kicking back into your hand. And it pushes and it hurts. A 22 long rifle with a half inch barrel, maybe not a lot of pressure buildup. So if I had something like that fired from my hand or a little finger or something like that, you're most definitely going to see it. That I promise you. Like this is a firearm and it has a very short barrel, and that very short barrel still has enough back pressure to literally dent and push into your hand. Like, it hurts when it goes off, when it's set back in your hand and you're actually shooting this. So that within itself, to me, I see things like that and I'm like, this is literally people that have no idea what the hell they're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that the guy was firing off a pen bullet. I don't think any of that. I don't think that the 22 would have had a crack that far, because you hear the shot, like, from the people standing way on the other side of the on the top where there was like a railing on the other side, like facing Charlie. So like the dude holding his camera out, you can hear the shot there. So yes, I don't think it would have been like it almost sounds like it is coming over their head, but it still sounds suppressed. But acoustics does some weird things. Like, if you've ever been in a gunfight, when rounds come and you hear the gunfight, you can look left and be like, they must come from that direction. If you didn't see the flash, you don't know where they're coming. It's going to be very difficult to find out where the guys is until you see them. Like, sometimes we would even go out with the one Humvee that had a 50 cal on it and just fire randomly towards the tree line. We knew Russians were somewhere there, just to have an observer watch and try to spot those muzzle flashes. It's recon by fire kind of thing. But I don't know. I think everybody just needs to wait until the actual official autopsy comes out, if they're going to release that. Because the autopsy is going to tell a story. It's very difficult. It's easy to make statements and correct mistake statements and like go back on something and misspeak something.
Yep.
It's very difficult to have a autopsy that isn't what the actual coroner saw.
Has to match. Everything has to match at this point.
I think the best, like, so this is why I jumped off. I did comment on Nate's video this morning, because he was talking about the guy in the bush, but it can't be a bush because he went in an old photo and or it could be a bush because in an old photo there's a plant there. But then I corrected him. I said, but look at the drone footage from an hour after the scene was locked down. There's no people walking. All this dirt is still on the ground. Mm-hmm. Everything is locked down with tape, and there's a drone slowly looking the whole thing. There isn't a plan there. So you have to look at everything before you make these statements. I think the best case scenario is we wait and see what the official autopsy, not what the official feds reports are telling us, because I don't really care what the feds are telling us. They're going to tell us whatever they want the public to know. They're not obligated to give us details that will make us comfortable.
Correct.
The trial and the autopsy are going to be the two things where we're going to get the most information. I believe this is going to be a public trial. This is going to be a live stream, and the government is then going to actually drop all the evidence that they physically have and that they didn't release, because they obviously don't want everybody running on and twisting in whatever they do.
That's why I went over the probable cause affidavit, because the probable cause affidavit is going to have evidence to back up the statements that are within it. They're not going to put things in there that they don't have the evidence to back up. And if it's just simply observations, then they'll put those observations in there. But when you start saying that these messages were received, he said these things, that they told these parents this, all of that's going to be captured on video, along with the different timestamps that everything went down. And those corroborating statements between the parents, I think, and his lover slash roommate are two things that are likely not going to intersect, right? Like, you're not going to have those parents constantly talking back and forth with the roommate. And at that point, if they want to make sure and validate that they're not just setting this kid up and that the roommate didn't do it and they just wanted to get rid of the kid, like, they are going to look and they're going to dig through those phones. They might have even taken those phones and ripped them with consent, right? The law enforcement officers might have taken it, asked the people to unlock their phones, and they could have ripped those phones so that they can go over all of the data on the phones and confirm that they weren't talking to each other.
There's going to be body camera footage and all that stuff also coming out in the trial.
I brought up Come and Take It and Ready Dangles up here, and I skipped over Shane initially because some
Come
of these
and Take
names
It
don't
is
really
server
come.
Muted. I don't know who server muted him or if that's an accident. When he came up, I saw his server muted, so I'm gonna unmute him. I don't know who muted him. It might have been a different mod or something, but
yeah,
I just went ahead. He's unmuted now, so you go ahead and take it.
What you got, man? Come and Take It. What you got?
Shoot, man.
There you are.
I can't hear you.
Okay, we can hear you. Maybe that's why he's muted. Might be a good reason why he's muted. So while he's trying to figure out, ready, dangle.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Hey, I'm not really in the, like, conspiracy of, like, someone else shot. I mean, it is weird that, you know, a 30-06 round didn't just blow a hole in the side of his neck. But a lot of what you were saying today makes could make some sense. Do you think there's any way that, he's more like he's been radicalized to do this from a bigger power? That's kind of the more of the camp that I'm in.
Yeah, I believe that there's information that suggests that people online do radicalize people like this. However, I have not seen any evidence so far that states that that's what happened in this case.
Yeah, you know, I guess I do kind of have my tinfoil hat on, but I don't really, the problem with like people saying that there's another shooter is like, how do you get a 20-year-old kid to take a fall for something that he didn't do? Because I'd be singing like a songbird.
Well, right. Not only would, yeah, that, but I mean, the guy flat out admits it, saying that he did it. He set things up ahead of time. He had that note inside those text messages. They're also going to be able to go back and see where his cell phone was at those point in times, because he had his phone on him. So that evidence would be tracking him through the wood line and everything else. I mean, there's just so much evidence that would be stacked against this guy that you can sit and you can fling conspiracies, but they're not going to hold water.
Yeah. I do find it odd, which maybe this isn't true and I missed something, that I seen something where Discord was saying that those messages were not on their platform. And that kind of stood out to me as well.
Messages were not on whose platform?
On Discord.
Yeah. Cause the feds came out originally said that this communication with the lover was on Discord, and like, they were chatting on Discord, and then Discord said that nothing like that happened. I don't know if somebody misconfused the different chat.
Yeah, I think
again,
I think that has to do with, so there was some stuff going around about Trans Tifa coordinating this on Discord, and so that very well could come out at trial, and they didn't feel the need to put that in the probable cause affidavit. Or that could also be that they have an ongoing investigation with it, so they're not releasing that information. But coordination between him and his lover on Discord might not be a thing, but I did hear about coordination with Trans Tifa on Discord when it came down to this, but none of that's been released yet.
Gotcha. That's all I got. Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Just to go over some of these questions that are sitting over here. First thing I got to do, Fox McCloud, people came up with all kinds of convoluted reasons when there's a simple answer. Evil men will do evil things. I agree with that statement. D-Rock gifting out a Speak the Truth membership. Appreciate you, D-Rock. Really, really do. And let's see here. We had some other ones come in. I saw somebody gifting out 20 Speak the Truth memberships. For some reason, that went away. Jude Chase says, when you fire over 10,000 rounds, you see weird stuff all of the time. And Anthol West says what he used reloaded ammo and used old powder or didn't get the ratio right. That very well could be a thing. Or he could have bought some old ones off of the internet, right? It's 30-06. There's old people that get rid of crap like that all the time. It very well could be like old ammo that just got repurposed, reused, whatever. So not necessarily.
He did say it was his grandfather's rifle. No,
that's what I'm
so
saying.
He could have also grabbed ammo from the grandfather's ammo butt can or something that could have been sitting in the garage, moisty. Like this guy, Judd Chase, just made a comment. He sent you $10, and he said, when you fire over 10,000 rounds,
exactly,
you see weird stuff all the time. It's true. And by the way, to the person who gave out 20 Speak the Truth membership is Leon Boyson.
Yeah, that's who.
Yeah. So he's the and then there's one more there. Yeah. Anthol West gave $5 and he says, What if he used reloaded ammo and got the powder wrong?
Yeah, I mean I agree with that. There's a lot of different things. I didn't see him.
I mean, he did engrave these. If the actual engravings are real, if I'm a guy who's gonna engrave rounds, I'm gonna open the round, pour out the gunpowder, do my engraving, fill it, and press it back. That's what I would do. It's $35 or $39.99 a hand press on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not hard to buy a press. I wouldn't stand there with a Dremel and start with a diamond tipped engraver, start engraving on a round. Even though, yes, it's quite safe to do so. You're not touching the striker and all that stuff. I don't know what could happen, and I don't want to find out. I'd rather not. So maybe he did that. We don't know that. All of this is like they're actually going to investigate,
and
they're
not going to.
Yeah. They're not going to tell us these things. They don't want us to have, like, they don't want the public to have too sensitive information that could jeopardize or could be twisted or could be put in the mindset of people that will be potential jurors in this trial. Right. So there's going to be a lot of things that they're not going to say. And don't get me wrong, I still think that the whole situation doesn't make sense. Like, how exactly did he pick his thing? Somebody pointed out a very good point, actually, and said that there's a tree that blocks a little bit of that view. The round might have touched a branch on the way in and slowed down a velocity. There's a lot of things that could be. I think for the public,
a tumbling round bleeds velocity so fast. It bleeds velocity so fast.
It does. Like I said, I fired at maybe 50 meters AK at a wooden plywood. It was like literally just a plywood with a target on it. We were at the polygon, and one of the rounds tumbled, and it went sideways onto the plywood and stuck. It's like halfway was still out, and it just like pressed into the plywood. And I was like, wait, what? Like, but then it happens.
Exactly. All right. Who did we just bring up? I want to get another comment in here. Bryce ended up bringing you up, man. What you got, Bryce?
Yeah, man. One of the things I was going to bring up is the fact that what if the round that was actually being fired was something like a Remington Core-Lokt or something like a real soft lead style round that on impact, it mushrooms out and it bleeds off velocity that way, and possibly deflects down into his body cavity once it strikes the neck. Like, once it strikes his spinal cord.
Yeah, I mean, like, when it comes to terminal ballistics, all things are possible. And they didn't state specifically the type of round that was fired. So, all things are possible. I know Core-Lokt, like, I've shot lots of animals with Remington Core-Lokt, and even those, a lot of the times, end up blasting through.
And then the other thing I was going to bring up was the fact of, you were talking about it could have been an explosion into his neck or whatever. I mean, in the video itself, you can hear the crack of the round and then hear the report of the rifle. So you can already make a distance call on that.
Right. Right. And
yeah, that was that was just the only two things I had to bring to the conversation.
Valid.
Yep. I appreciate it, man.
Of course. Shane, I'm going to pull you up, see what you got, man, and then we're going to try to get come and take it back in here afterwards. What's up, Shane?
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
I've got a few more minutes. I was kind of with Nate on a few of his videos. Glad you put a video out and explained some more of it. I've hunted all my life, man. I've seen a 300 Win Mag stop in a small doe. I've seen a 30-06 stop in a spike's neck.
Mm-hmm.
It's very possible. I want to see the autopsy report, and then they say they have the bullet. I want a picture of the bullet, man. I want to see the bullet, because that'll tell you everything.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that's absolutely going to end up getting released at trial. We're looking to have a debate with Mario, Alex Jones, and yourself on the conspiracy theories behind Charlie Kirk's death. Oh, I would love to do that.
On the autopsy thing, man, I lost my daughter, and it didn't take but like a week and a half, and they had that full autopsy report and everything to go with it. So I imagine this probably wouldn't take much longer, seeing how high profile this is. No, I don't want to say my daughter was a nobody, but you know what I mean? It seems like there would be a rush on it, or there would be like he skips to the front of the line and they really get to figure it out. Because they came through with hers really fast.
Can you say that again?
They came through with my daughter's autopsy report like real fast. It was like a week and a half.
Yeah, I mean.
So I imagine his would be pretty quick.
You would think that, but it depends on the county, the amount of the amount of stuff that they have, everything that goes into it.
I think they're going to hold off on that till trial.
Right. But when it goes down to releasing the autopsy report, they might not even release that publicly, man.
I mean, if it's going to be, it's going to be in the discovery. Like, I don't think they're going to seal the discovery. It's going to be in the discovery of evidence. Like, they're going to put it in there. But they might, like, they might wait till the actual trial. So the state introduces the autopsy into evidence, then it will be public. But like, they're going to use that in the trial 100%. But, we don't know. There's a lot of things that could happen. They could request a closed trial. The guy might just plead guilty. And then, I mean, right now he's pleading is definitely not guilty or whatever as a lawyer, but I you know, you never know. He might just say, yeah, whatever, I take it, and there is no trial. So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think people just need to wait and actually see the real results of an autopsy
report. That's really what it boils down to. That's really what it boils down to, is that we have to wait and we have to see the results of everything that's going to end up coming out. I mean, that's just the way it goes.
Yep.
I'm right there with you, brother. I appreciate you bringing me up, and man, I really appreciate the work you did over in Israel, man. Giving us a firsthand view and a firsthand experience. You know what you couldn't show, but you could talk about. God bless you, brother, man. I'm gonna get back to work. I'm gonna keep listening. Y'all have a blessed day, man.
Yeah, you too, brother.
Cheers.
Cheers.
I don't know if you have time, but there's one more hand, Gunfighter. I don't know if you have time today.
Yeah,
but
let's bring Gunfighter in, man. And go ahead and get him in here. Is he up? Gunfighter, or yeah, what you got, brother?
He probably doesn't have his audio set up proper. I'm going to bring up Death Rides real quick and let him sort his audio out. But like, for the people that want to come up to Discord, Discord does have the audio test check, so you can do a self audio check before you come up.
Exactly.
Yeah, go. Death Rides.
Hey, so I just wanted to make one quick point, and you know, I don't want to be blackpilling people or anything, but the reality is, they will tell us what they want to tell us. They will hide. If they want to hide something, it can be hidden. There's been so many shenanigans happening in major events in the United States. It's been happening for a long time. Whether this is legit or not, this whole story might not be legit. Like, it could be a conspiracy or it could not be, and we'll probably never know.
I'd agree with
you.
I think we will. I think we can use common sense and we can say, is it possible? So let's look at who collected that evidence, which is information that we're going to get at trial, because they're going to have to show the evidence chain of custody at trial. And so we'll know who collected the evidence. So you can use common sense and say, was it the FBI that found all of this evidence, or was it local law enforcement officers that found it? So just like the local campus police officer that was on the rooftop found the shooting position, well, who found the rifle? And then you got to also ask the question about the parents and the roommate, right? Like, what motivations would the roommate have for coming out with this? Motivations would the parents have for coming out with this? All of those different things, right? So those are all things that we can look at. We can assess common sense on whether or not this was set up. If it turns out to be that all of this stuff randomly happened and it was just by luck that the Bureau was able to get all of this information, I'm with you on, yeah, we should probably look more into that.
There's a possibility that it plays out like that. And this could just be what they're saying it is. That this literally, like, they could have everything just about right, and we just are seeing weird things or whatever. That's a possibility. I'm not saying that this is definitely conspiracy. All I'm saying is it could be, and it could get manipulated. And if it is a conspiracy and they could manipulate everything, they'll just seal the trial. And they'll seal the evidence up so we can't see it. Like, I just, there's been too many events for too long, and our government thinks they can do whatever they want. They can think they can lie to us about everything. They think they can hide whatever they want from us. And we saw with COVID, all the stuff they did during COVID, they were literally hiding information from us on purpose. And then if they get caught, they get away with it. So yeah. I don't want anyone wrapping up their whole, like, their emotional stability into figuring out what happened here. Cause we might not ever know, but we really might. I mean, we still don't know what happened in Vegas. Nobody really, like, there's so much crazy stuff with that, and they're still hiding stuff, all that. We're never going to know. And that was the biggest mass shooting in American history. So don't get too wrapped up in, like, I got to solve this, because it really might not matter in the end. That's all I wanted to say. Thanks. Y'all have a good one.
Yeah, take care, brother. Yeah, I'm with you on, like, the okay. biggest thing. Like, that whole situation's weird. I don't like the Vegas thing. Yep. I'm with you on that. Texas, closing thoughts?
Yeah, closing thoughts. I think that people need to, like me, I was in a hot seat for a full week after this happened. Like, I'm talking about, I probably spent 50 hours, maybe not even exaggerating, maybe more, looking at everything I can find open source on this. And then after processing that much information, I was like, maybe I need to slow down because this is too much. Like, when you have all the perfect, like, angle of a, look, okay, if this was a 30-06, you're not catching with any cell phone a frame of that round flying. Like, I don't care what cell phone you have. If you're just recording a crown, I'm not talking about if it's on a tripod set up on an angle where it's going to have the round exactly fly by it and you preset all the settings for that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about any average person recording this event, that cell phone on that settings and that movement in a hand is not going to catch up around moving. Like, it moves fast. Mm-hmm. It moves that fast that it can literally break the sound barrier. You're not going to see it on the thing. So I think, like I said, people need to calm down. People need to wait. And in the end of the day, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. We still lost Charlie Kirk. I think that Charlie Kirk made a big difference in our country. I think that he like, look at me, I'm Jewish. I don't, like, have nothing to do with Christianity or anything. Like, but he was still a man of faith in my eyes. He was still a man of, like, mm-hmm. like, he was a bold man. Not many people today are bold men. He had a lot of courage, and we lost somebody like that. And we need to, like, you know, maybe talk about the good things or the bad things that will come out of this. Not talk about, like, was it in the back? Was it in the front? Was it, like, today I got, like, a notification from somebody on X sending me a video that Candace Owens now is saying that a group of farmers might have been involved in the assassination of an underground communist death cult. It's ridiculous. So, like, I'm just gonna... The social media is a poison, people. It's like, it became to the point where a guy with a green screen background is doing a video showing you the proof of already debunked videos, and it has 7 million views.
Yep.
So, like, people need to just chill.
Well, people
that's
don't...
my closing thoughts on today.
Yeah, man. I thank you for those, by the way. Like, seriously important. Too many people want conspiracies. Like, sometimes crazy stuff just happens. And that's all there is to it. Sometimes.
No, really? It happens? Yeah. Wow.
Sometimes
I can't believe that.
Crazy,
like,
people
it's
just
almost like we live
world.
In 2025.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping I do get a debate.
On a side
Alex.
Note, before you close out real quick, off topic, I know this is completely 100% Charlie Kirk investigation timeline and all that. But off topic, just got a notification. Secretary of Defense just ordered almost every major and general to be at a emergency Pentagon DOD briefing, something. Every, like, hold on, I'll read it real quick. Where is it here? Secretary of Defense. Well, they made a mistake. Secretary of War, Pete Exodus, ordered a rare urgent gathering of nearly all generals, admirals in the U.S. Army, Air Force, Marine Corps, Navy, Space Force, at Marine Corps Base Quantico in Virginia. Currently unknown reason, according to the Washington Post.
Hmm.
So that's just off topic. I know I derailed it, but I figured we'd finish off with something that literally just came out less than like 45 minutes ago or something like that.
I see what looks like that Israel also bombed the crap out of the Houthis again. So that happened. So waiting on more information for all that crap.
Well, we'll see what's going on. Probably before the night stream, you'll have more information on that. Once the information is going to come out, it might just be something routine. It might be something more than routine, and we'll find out. Just figure it out, bring it up. Anyways, although that closing thoughts is, people, if you are a member, join our Discord. If you're not a member, I don't know what the hell you're doing.
I don't know what you're doing with your life.
Come on.
I don't know what you're doing with your
life. I have no idea.
I don't know what you're doing.
No idea. Yeah.
All right, brother, man.
All right. Cheers, brother. I'll talk to you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. In the meantime, peace, love, happiness, and God bless. I am out of here. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Candace Owens, bees and death cults, and that's the responsibility. That's where all this crap came from. Yeah, death cults and bees. Nope. Who knows? Maybe it's true. I mean.